It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Harriet Hageman. So glad to see you. Welcome
to the
show.
Thank you for having me. Yes, it's wonderful.
So, first off, great state of Wyoming. I'm going to throw a date out there, and you just tell me if the date means anything to you. 1878.
It was when Wyoming gave women the right to vote.
That's right.
That's right.
Now, if I also remember, that was the same year that maybe somebody from your family came from Texas.
That's right. My great-grandfather, James C. Shaw, came from Texas on the cattle trail, first landing in Fort Laramie, worked for a variety of ranchers in Wyoming, and then ended up with a ranch of his own near Orange Junction.
Now, did you grow up around ag?
I did. I grew up on a ranch near Fort Laramie. My parents bought a ranch there in 1961, just west of Fort Laramie.
So, really, you've got such a great feel for what's important to the state.
Well, I hope that I do. I sure work at it. Obviously, I would describe agriculture as being one of our legacy industries, along with minerals and tourism. It is extremely important that we protect our ag industry for Wyoming as well as for the country as a whole.
So when something like Waters of the U.S. pops up, and I know this precedes you in Congress, but doesn't precede, you had full knowledge of what was happening under the original rule, then the Obama-era rule, the Trump-era rule, and now a Biden-era rule. This is confusing, but how do you make sense of Waters of the U.S.?
Well, one of the things that you're describing is the fact that because it is not Congress that's actually doing the legislating, but it is administrative agencies, whenever we change administrations from Democrat to Republican or Republican to Democrat, we toggle back and forth between these interpretations of what the statutes actually mean. And I think that the waters of the definition of the navigable waters of the U.S. rule, I think that that's a perfect example of how that happens. Under Trump and under previous administrations, and obviously my interpretation of the Clean Water Act is quite narrow in the sense of what was intended by Congress. Congress used the word navigable waters of the United States for a reason. But over the last 30 years, especially, the courts have really written the word navigable out of the statute. And then what you have with an Obama administration, a Clinton administration, or a Biden administration, because they use things like the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and the various other statutes for land grabs. The Endangered Species Act is another example. FLIPMA is another example. They use these statutes not for the purpose that they were intended, but for the purpose of controlling our lives and restricting our ability to use our own private property.
So, with this 9-0 decision from the Supreme Court, basically not agreeing with EPA's quote-unquote overreach here, where do we go?
Well, I think that we go back to the words of the statute. And I am hoping that the EPA and the Corps of Engineers will finally get the message that that statute means what it says and says what it means. Now, so many people want to say, oh, now we're going to have dirty water and they're going to destroy our waterways and blah, 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 blah. That's not the case. What the point of the Clean Water Act was is that federal jurisdiction should be limited and confined. The states still have jurisdiction, and every state in the nation has a Department of Environmental Quality. It might go by a different name. Maybe it's a Department of Natural Resources. But in Wyoming, it's the Department of Environmental Quality, and we have a Water Quality Division. And it will go back to the states in terms of overseeing those smaller streams. In addition to which, it's always interesting to me that people really believe that the federal government is out there managing and dictating how we do things. They do that through litigation, and they do that through prosecuting and persecuting landowners. But in reality, it is the states that manage our waterways right now and our water resources. In Wyoming, in terms of water quantity, it's the Wyoming State Engineer's Office and Board of Control. Water quality, again, is the Department of Environmental Quality.
Are there other areas that, I mean, it's a long way from Wyoming to Washington, D.C., and it's not that maybe those making decisions don't mean well. They just don't understand the state, and for that matter, Western states. Do Western states face some challenges maybe that others don't?
Well, I think that's absolutely fair. And I noticed that in my committee work with working with folks from the other side. They don't understand, or they have up to this point, at least they feign not to understand, that wildlife is managed, again, by state agencies. I'll use Wyoming, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. So even for endangered or threatened species, we don't have a bunch of federal employees running around Wyoming and protecting our grizzly bears or our wolves or any other. Well, wolves aren't listed anymore, but the grizzly bears are. It is the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And as an example of what I mean by that, Wyoming has spent $59 million recovering the grizzly bear population. The federal government has spent $100,000. Yet it's the federal government and the Fish and Wildlife Service that refuses to delist the grizzly bear, despite the fact that we met our recovery goals almost a quarter century ago. So here we are 25 years later, we have double the population of grizzly bears that was included in that recovery plan, and we can't delist because the environmental groups, again, use the Endangered Species Act to control activities on private land. So yeah, I think it's very clear that people back here in Washington, D.C. do not understand how we manage water, how we manage wildlife, how we manage a lot of these resources, yet they're the ones that are making the decisions. And it is, it's been very challenging to our producers, to our oil and gas developers, to our coal miners, to our Department of Transportation, to so many organizations, private and public, because Washington, D.C. is where the rules are made, but they're enforced out at an area where the folks back here, they don't understand Wyoming.
Speaking of not understanding, it's easy to sit back and look at something, let's use Packers at this point, beef packers or the pork industry, but it's easy to sit back and say, well, that doesn't make sense to me, or this makes sense to me, and it might not really make sense in the industry. And I throw all that out because I believe earlier today, hearing in the Judiciary Committee on the Prime Act, What's that and what are you pulling from that?
Well, the Prime Act is a bill. Thomas Massey is the primary sponsor of that. I'm a co-sponsor. And essentially what it does is it rewrites the statutes and gets rid of a lot of the regulations that the federal government started imposing in the 1960s that make it extremely difficult, especially for a state like Wyoming, where we don't have big packers or big packing plants, for us to be able to adequately process the meat and on behalf of our farmers and ranchers, local communities, restaurants, and everything else. The way the situation is right now is that unless the facility is USDA inspected, if it is state inspected, it has to meet the exact same extremely stringent requirements that a federal facility has to meet, but we can only sell intrastate. So it makes absolutely no sense. We have really put up barriers to our ability for our local producers to reach out to restaurants, for example, and provide their local beef for that, or for our ranchers to custom feed and custom butcher for people. The laws it make no sense. They're very draconian, and we're trying to fix that. We had four incredible witnesses. I would encourage people to go and watch the committee hearing today. It lasted just a couple of hours. I realize that's a lot of time, but I think that we presented some extremely important information for our cattle and hog and chicken producers. And we also started addressing the fact very openly about the fact that we have a monopolistic situation with the four big packers in this country, and that needs to change. We've got a situation with agency capture where those four packers basically control the USDA and the FDA when it comes to things associated with our meat production, and we need to change that. They're the ones that are raking in massive amounts of cash. They're trying to vertically integrate the cattle industry. They've largely done that with pigs and chickens, but they're also trying to vertically integrate our cattle industry, and I think it would be really devastating. We need to move away from the monopolistic model, and we need to expand our availability for packing, for butchering, and have more custom-type operations.
such a pleasure to meet you and get to hear some of your thoughts. Will you come back and see us somewhere down the road?
Of course I will.
Okay.
I like talking about these issues. They're important to my state.
Judiciary Committee and also Natural Resources.
Yes, I am.
Is that right?
Yes, and on Natural Resources, I'm the chairman of the Subcommittee on Indian and Insular Affairs, and I'm on the Committee for Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries. And then Judiciary, I'm on the Administrative Law Subcommittee, the Constitutional and Limited Government Subcommittee, and I'm the only freshman on the Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government.
Exciting. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's the Honorable Harriet Hageman, who represents the great state of Wyoming in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.